here. And most insurances won't cover it, just in case you want to know.
How has East Meredith changed over this time?
Again, it's well, they had a gas station. That's gone now. Both grocery stores are gone. We still have a post office, but now it's only open 4 hours a day. I mean, you can get in and get your mail in the mailbox, but those things are gone. The mill is gone. You know, the camaraderie's at the mill. You know, at this one store at Henderson's, which is almost directly across the street from my house, they had an old coal stove in the back, and that's where everybody would come in and shoot the breeze on a cold winter day. You know, he'd have coffee or whatever, and everybody'd have a cigar or a pipe and just sit there and chew the fat. Not anymore. Those places are all gone. All I got is the memories of them. You know, I used to go in there, you know, when the guys would be in there. And at the gas station, when I was a kid, there would be several farmers going to play cards all afternoon before they went home and milked the cows. And the big game was pinochle. Whether they paid for a lot of money, I don't know. But there was money exchanged. But those things are gone. You don't see that anymore. We have one neighbor that has a party. I'm trying to think of what they call it. I can't even think of what they call it now. But it's a new dead of winter. Rain, snow, 10 below. It doesn't make any difference. They have the party. Last year, because I was real sick, I couldn't go. But it's usually, you know, 20, 30 people there. And that's the winter fun. It's set by a campfire, and somebody brings a covered dish. You know, whether it's chili or some kind of a stew or steaks or hot dogs, whatever it is, somebody brings something. And that's about the most the community does together. So one time. And a lot of the people aren't from the community, but they do invite everybody that's in the neighborhood. So. But, let's say, other than that, there's nothing else goes on in the town anymore.
I know you said you moved away for a while. Since you've been back, what have you appreciated about East Meredith that you didn't appreciate as a kid?
Quiet. Very, very quiet. Majority of the time you could hear a pin drop. 7 days a week. Seeing the old stream again behind my house. The waterfall's long gone. There was a flood in, I think it was 70 or 72, that wiped out the waterfalls and most everything else down through the back of my dad's house. But other than that, not much has changed, really. The old houses are still there. Most of the originals that I knew as a kid are gone. I think there's two people I know of that was there when I was a kid or a young man. One owned a gas station. He's 90 or 91 now. And another lady, in fact, she brought me down some dahlia bulbs, called me up and said my red ones looked great this summer, so she brought me down some pink ones. She's the only other lady I know of that was there when I was a kid. Again, she's got to be well into her 80s. And those are the people I can still remember. But they're the only ones left. It's pretty sad. When I can look and tell you who lived in every single house at one time when I was a kid. They're all gone. Part of life, I guess.
So who lives there now?
Oh, the ladies, what do you mean, the older people?
You said that most of the people are gone now. Who's come into the town, or have they?
Transplants from downstate. Long Island, New York City, New Jersey. You know, and it's a whole different lifestyle there. You know, they grew up where it was much faster. You didn't have time to be buddy-buddy with your neighbor or whatever. There was, I'm sure that there was interaction between neighbors, but not like I was used to, where everybody knew everybody, and everybody took care of everybody. And that's changed. It's kind of everybody for themselves. Not everybody, but a good share of. I guess that's the thing I've noticed most. And I won't say where they're from. I just said downstate in Jersey. None from Texas.
So since the mill has become a museum, what traditions have they kept and what's changed?
I don't know about traditions, but they do have a lot of tours now to show people what was done, like where the water wheel was, how long, when it was replaced, all the different machinery that's in, it's in the building. That's pretty much all you see now, just museum people. And there are days that there are probably a couple hundred people go there. Through the summer. They open up, I think it's in May, and they close in October or November. It used to be November. But they'll show everybody through the mill, the saw, how it operated. The only thing I don't think is there that used to be there was the diesel engine they used to run the saw with. Because when water got low, you couldn't run the saw. Everything in the old mill was run by water. In fact, the old mill used to supply the electricity to East Meredith. And you always invited Horace Hanford or John Hanford to the party, or you didn't have electricity. There was a generator. In fact, they've restored that now. And they're all DC bulbs, which they're a light, like a see-through glass, but they're all DC voltage, not AC voltage. All fed off this generator. And again, I imagine it was run by a small diesel engine, or maybe water in the beginning, but that's still available there, because that's what they run the mill on, is the DC power. You can tell just by looking at the lights. It's just a different color light, a different phase of light. Trying to think of other things that they show them through. Well, they show them where the old boiler was. It would raise steam. They had a lot of steam power. They put in a lot of steam equipment. Most of it's not running now. In fact, I don't think there's any steam equipment running. But they had that available. And it's a big old wood furnace. It'd be probably half the size of this room. And they would fill it full of log. There were, I believe, pipes that ran down, that would run the saw all on steam before they put their diesel engine in. And how many horsepower the diesel motor was, I don't know. Probably 100 horse at least. It was a huge engine. I think that's gone now. But I do remember it running as a kid. It was noisy. But it kept the saws going. And in wintertime, of course, you can't saw once it's all frozen. There's just not enough water in the pond. And they have a gate at the end of the mill race over on what they call Courtright Creek. And they used to open and close that to raise and lower the flow of the level of water in the pond. So, and that still operates, actually. And I think they still use it. They put a screen in the bottom because there's so much junk comes up through there. Wood, leaves, fish, all kinds of weird stuff. I don't know. The last I knew, they hadn't hooked up any of the steam equipment, but they were piping it in. And whether they have done that yet or not, I don't know. But that's what used to run one of the water wheels. It was done on some kind of a spray. I can't tell you exactly what it was, but it would just hit that thing just right and It's been the water wheel. And some of the old pipes are still down there, buried at the bottom of the mill. It's weird. And everything, most of the stuff down there is original. And I'm sure that some of the stuff they've had to rot, that's rotted, they've replaced with lumber that is cut at the mill. Anything that's repaired down there is cut at the mill. You know, they'll buy a load of logs, say, to build picnic benches. They build all the wood that's on those picnic benches is cut right at the mill. Or any repairs they have to do to railings, floors, all cut at the mill. And it's fascinating to watch it.
You told me you worked as an interpreter at the museum.
Yes.
What was that like?
It's scary. Because there was always somebody there that really knew this stuff. And some of it, you know, you had to kind of skate your way through. You know, they gave you a kind of a brief history of how this worked and why it worked this way. But if you got somebody that was had operated a mill, they could tell you stories that you were just totally lost. They'd ask you questions that you have no idea. You know, gear ratios and, you know, I was never into that. They never explained that. You know, the size of the water wheel will decide how fast the saw will run. There were people that knew that. I have no idea. You know, these are almost engineers, some of them. But it was interesting. I got to know a lot of things that I hadn't seen in many, many years. They used to make little boxes, little, like for milk trays. They made tons of those for milk companies. In fact, I think there's some on display down there even now. And I know there was a lady down there that's all she did all day, was make boxes. And this is when I worked down there. And she would spend it all day. Somebody would cut all the wood for her, and she would assemble all the boxes, and he used to sell a ton of them. Some of them are milk crates, probably 2 feet long, very narrow, great for CDs. That's what most of them bought them for, was CDs. And I don't remember how much they were now, but very inexpensive. But it was all stuff cut at the mill. You know, they had saws near where they made the boxes that cut it to perfect length for every box. And I used to do that once in a while. But they had an old gentleman that he knew the stuff inside and out. He made all the replacement windows in the building. Just by looking at what the old ones were, because the old ones, the originals, were so rotted that they took him out, and he redesigned all new windows. And he did it all on his little bench out back, and all the saws at the mill. All the lumber that was put in those was made at the mill from the original logs. Well, from the logs that they get in there. So it was quite interesting. And then they used to ship a lot of barrels would be shipped in. And they used to make tops for butter. And the butter would be shipped down country or wherever. And it would last a lifetime. And they had a machine there that would actually cut the tops. One side would cut the groove, the other side would make the tongue. And you just smack them together, all made of pine. And that's one of the things they made. And one of the things I made a few of, and you do in demonstrations. Now the machines have guards on them. They didn't when my dad was there. You know, that's a long time ago. You know, safety was not probably a priority. If you came home with all your fingers, you had a good day. I know it's a pretty sick thing to say, but there was a lot of gentlemen lost fingers, hands. But they come back bandaged up and ready to go for the afternoon. Yeah, You know, these are just stories that I've heard from just different guys. You know, they knew these people. And you'd see a lot of them missing fingers. Stuff was very dangerous. You had to really pay attention. I mean, they had band saws. They had circular saws. And they had the main saw. That thing was deadly. I mean, it would just cut a log like it was nothing. Can you imagine being caught in that thing? And the belts in the cellar, and they were near the water wheel, were humongous belts, and they ran all over, and you had to be real careful that somebody didn't move a lever upstairs and engage everything while you're trying to put the belt on, because it would probably rip your arm off. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not, but they got all kinds of pulleys down there, and it was different ways to put belts on depending on how they wanted the machine to run. You know, where you want to run clockwise, you twist the belt one way. If you wanted it counterclockwise, you twist it back the other way. Again, these are things I didn't know until I went down there. They had a millwright that was working there, and he's one of the very few in the country. He used to travel all over the country sharpening blades, especially the old grist mill. I'm trying to think what you call them. They're huge stones where they grind the grains like corn into a powder. That's what he did. But he could sharpen anything. But that was his kick, and he was good at it. But he used to travel all over the country sharpening this stuff. I guess it's quite an art. But he doesn't work there anymore either.
So you mentioned pine. What other woods went through the...
Usually hemlock, pine, probably not much hardwood, unless somebody was making a hardwood floor or something. But most of it was pine. And it's a soft wood and easy to work with. And probably a lot of the houses in East Meredith were built with pine or hemlock. There was another wood that's, I guess it's almost extinct now. I don't recall the name of it, but there were very few trees. They used to have them not marked out, but then the flood took them all out. But they were a very special, very, very hard tree. You could just about drive a nail into it. But this is what they used to build houses. And I'm sure they did a lot of hardwood, but most of the stuff I saw was pine and hemlock, softwoods. And it used to be stacked. Just tons of it in the yard. This is, again, when I was a kid. And stacks of lumber all over the place. But now they just do it for something to do. And they do sell the stuff. And it's pretty reasonable. Very reasonable. I think I got two pieces of molding, like 8 feet long each. And I think it was like $3. That's pretty reasonable. I don't think you can go to Lowe's and buy it unless you want to buy clear pine or something. These were hemlock, but it's the only place I can get it. Like I said, the 4 inches. That was really tough. And I've had a couple other pieces cut down there. I've got a fence next to my house, all cut at the mill. All the posts, all the rails. And I think she charged me $100. If I went to Lowe's or Home Depot, it would probably cost me $300-$400 for it. Easy. I don't remember, it's like 100 feet and three rails, so that's what, 300 feet for $100. In fact, we just treated it. We put it up last year and we just treated it this year. But she cut all the posts for me, and they're all 4x4. I want to put lights on the top of them, and they won't fit because they're a true 4x4. If you go to a place like Lowe's, they're 3¾ or something like that, which these lights will fit perfectly on. So I had to build blocks on top of them to make them fit. But that's what I'm saying about everything was full size. 4x4 is a 4x4. Not 3.75. I guess that's the difference in a lot of stuff.
So, who else would go to the mill today for things like molding and fence posts?
Probably not many people know they do it. You know, I knew Dawn's when it did it for me, and I've known her for quite some time. And I think if anybody went down here and says, can you do this? Well, if she finds the time, she will do it. Well, it's making it, I think my fence rails were like 6 or 8 inches wide. And this is the stuff that they cut and they store anyway. So that was there. She just had to cut my posts for me. But I think she would do almost anything. And there's nothing they can't do there. I mean, they have a molding machine that can make crown molding like you wouldn't believe. It's got like 300 or 400 different blades. And it takes them like 8 hours just to set it up to get one piece of molding through it. It's quite a pain. I've only seen it run once. And it's so noisy you can't even stand to be in the building. That's how bad it is. Very loud. And it's just like the planer. When they smooth the boards out, you can't even be in there to listen to that. You have to wear earmuffs because it'll bust your eardrums. That's how loud it is. Again, back then, I'm sure that they didn't wear them.
How does the museum deal with the equipment being so loud?
Usually they have, you know, like the earmuffs and stuff like that. I mean, as far as hearing it up in town, you can hear the saw when it's running. But anything else, you can hear, well, you can hear the planer. But anything else, you can't even hear it.
What about when they're bringing tours through?
Most of the equipment, like the major saws, aren't even running. They only run those, say they have a group come from a school. They will run the saw. And that isn't as noisy as the planer or the molding machine. The molding machine, it'll just drive you nuts. It's just like somebody beating on rocks with 100 hammers. That's how bad it sounds. And you have to wear earmuffs, whatever you call them. Ear protection. You have to wear them. And eye protection. That is mandatory. And they have, in the mill, they have rails so you can't get close to the equipment. For your own safety. But they'll run anything there if you want to see it run. And the majority of the old mill, like I said, is all run by the water. Some of the newer parts of the mill, it's electricity. But the major old mill is all by water. It's pretty neat.
So I know that the museum has changed its mission recently to, I'm going to quote here, inspire audiences of all ages to explore connections among energy, technology, natural resources, and entrepreneurship in rural communities with a focus on sustainable choices. So what do you think about that?
Wow. When did they change all this? Just recently?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't even know they had changed this. As far as energy, you know, you can't beat water power. It doesn't cost anything. And they have a generator there that generates all the electricity they need. You know, if and when they run it, there are lights in there, but they also have the DC lights. And they do run the generator. So I'm sure that it's very efficient. Well, they don't have to use anything from outside. And as far as, you know, somebody using water in their house to run things, I don't think that would be feasible. It'd be pretty hard to run a channel under your house to make everything work. But see, I didn't know they had changed their policies. But it's economics, I really that's a tough one. Because they no longer handle feeds in there. You know, it's just a museum now. But they do, you know, the only thing they do is basically saw lumber. They do sell the sawdust or give it away. Sometimes they just give it away from the main saw. They have a huge blower down in there, and you don't want to be down there when they're running it. It's not a pretty sight. But that's it, you know. I don't know where you could save anything economically other than buying stuff there. You know, buy your lumber there. It's really cheap. was you're going to get what you get. You know, it may have some splits in it, so you got to be extremely careful. And some of the lumber has probably been sitting there 4 or 5 years. So it's very, very, very dry. In fact, my fence was probably sitting there 2 or 3 years. And we just put Thompson water seal on it this year. And it just soaked it up like a sponge. So I'll probably have to do it again next year. But economically, you can't beat it buying lumber there if you need it. It all depends on what you want. And I think all the, when you originally run the main saw, the logs, the bark end of it, they drop off, they give that stuff away. For people that want to use it in their outside furnaces, that's what most of them burn, is that old nasty pine and hemlock. I mean, you wouldn't want to burn it in your stove, but they burn it in their outside furnaces.
What do you think the museum can teach the people who visit?
The way it used to be. How simple things could be. You know, where you could use water power to generate almost anything. It, like I said, you know, if you had a generator and you could light the whole town. I don't remember how many houses, like 10 or 15 houses is what they lit just from the mill. But it would only be written, the power would only be on for 6 or 8 hours. And then when it was time to go to bed, boom, they shut the power off. But that's the way it worked. That's about the only thing I could see is, but everybody have to change their wiring to DC voltage. And that would be wicked expensive. But that's about the only economical advantage I could see. Because the mill's outlived itself. I think that's why it closed in 67, because it couldn't keep up. You know, it's a time when West Nesbitt and Agway were real big. And now they're West Nesbitt's history, as far as I know. And Agway's not very strong around here anymore. They used to be the great feed suppliers in the area. And that's one, I think, one of the things that killed them. And you had other sawmills that were updating. They were putting in modern equipment, computer control equipment. The old mill never did that. And if they did, it was going to be too late. Because everybody moved on. And it was a very small mill. That's the only thing I could see.
So, when you were an interpreter there, what was your favorite part of your job?
The kids. And when he turned the water wheel on, it was awesome, even for me, every time we turned it on. You know, you just yell for somebody upstairs to open the wheel, they'd open and let the water gush. And you could really get the water wheel running. And then every belt would just start turning. And it was just very fascinating. It had to be some much of a genius to figure out the size of each pulley. And there were spare pulleys to change the speeds on the saws. Now, would I ever know how to change one? Absolutely not. And they're all made of wood. There was no metal pulleys there. They were all wood. That's what was fascinating.
Would the pulleys have been made at the mill?
I doubt it. I'm not going to say that they weren't, but I doubt that they were. There were some metal replacements, you know, for the bigger equipment, but in the cellar, I believe it was all wooden pulleys. And some of them were pretty good size. You know, I'm talking probably 3 or 4 feet in diameter that would run some of the saws. I can't remember how big the one was for the main saw, but they were pretty good sized pulleys. And once they got going, got that water wheel really spinning, and the water wheel would have to fill up each little bucket full of water before it would start to turn. But once it got turning, it was just unbelievable how fast that thing could go. And how fast you can get the saw to run. And it has to run quite fast to cut wood or